possibility of time travel is one that's intrigued humanity for a long time, maybe forever, at least as far back as H.G. Wells and his landmark novel that we all read in school or since then have read. And of course, since then, there have been many other variations in literature and entertainment. I remember it was a network series, I think in the 60s, called The Time Tunnel that I loved as a youngster. Of course, the Michael J. Fox Back to the Future movies since then, lots of versions in the world of entertainment and literature of what if we could go back in time or could we go forward in time? Is it even remotely feasible? And if so, what direction would you choose? We're going to talk to Nick Redfern, who's written an extensive book called Time Travel, The Science and the Science Fiction, and he casts a very wide net in looking at this question. We'll be right back and dig right into it. If time travel were possible, which direction would you choose? Would you want to go forward, see what the future holds, or go back? I mean, go back to see maybe the dinosaurs roaming around, or to kill Hitler, or to prevent Abraham Lincoln from being assassinated. And what about the paradoxes that are always raised when you discuss time travel? The grandfather paradox. If you travel back in time and kill your grandfather, then you wouldn't exist. So how can you travel back in time? Those are the kind of questions that arise when people start thinking about time travel. I'd like to believe that we all think about it at some point. It seems like that would be the case. Nick Redfern has certainly been thinking about it. He's collected a number of different angles and aspects of time travel in his new book, Time Travel, The Science and Science Fiction. Nick, welcome back to the program.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Good. Let me ask you this. So if you've thought about it enough, which direction would you want to go first, forward or backward?
Well, that is a good question. I think, theoretically, I would go back. You know, I mean, the idea of being able to change something, on the one hand, you know, could be very sort of positive. You know, as you brought up the classic angle of, like, killing Hitler, that kind of thing. And then there's the other angle, well, would it change time and the future to a significant different way, and we end up with somebody even worse than Hitler. So there's a lot of things along when you think about time travel as to should we really try and change things. Of course, you know, the angle to want to do this, I think the lure of it is perhaps the most important thing. But actually, you know, doing it, if we are one day, you know, able to do this, it could be a case that if only we hadn't done it in the first place, you know.
Of course, you cover the science of it that we'll get into in a moment, but you cover the science fiction part of it, the entertainment and literature part of it, and you give away some clues about what your favorites are. So let's dive into that part of the story. There are so many really cool movies and books that have used time travel as a plot device. Which are the ones that you really like that stand out for you?
Well, one of my favorites, and unfortunately, it's not like sort of, you know, a really obscure one. I mean, I would have to say that the first Time Machine with Rod Taylor would be certainly one of my favorites. And of course, you know, it was actually sort of, you know, based on H.G. Wells's original novel. And I think for me that's... Although it sounds a little bit sort of, oh yeah, you would pick that one, you know.
Yeah.
But it is one of those stories that really does make you think about, you know, not just the concept of time travel, but as I said, you know, should we do it? Should we not do it? But it does make us think the idea that if there really is time travel and there is significant data that suggests that in some situations that time travel really does exist, I think it's sort of fascinating to think that, you know, if we focus on the world of fiction, we can actually get a few ideas and thoughts and concepts that may be applied in the real world as well. So I think, you know, we can learn a lot from the world of time travel in fiction, whether it's movies, TV shows, things like that. Like you said, the time tunnel and things like that. And we can, I think, learn a lot from entertainment. And in that sense, if you like, it's not just entertainment. It's actually a case of us, like, on a learning curve, if you like.
There are several UFO-type angles to time travel, and you mentioned several of them that we'll cover at some point in the next 2 hours. But is that part of what drew you to write about this, or the UFO aspects of it?
Well, one of the reasons, I guess one of the primary reasons why I decided to write the book was because when people bring those two words together, time travel, it's very emotive subject. Can we do it? Can we not do it? You know, it's just nonsense, that kind of thing. You know, people have different views and concepts as to what it really is. And when I was doing the research, I found that the people who claim to have traveled through time, it's a very different situation to the world of fiction. Now, in fiction, you know, you've got things like, for example, Back to the Future. You know, you get in a DeLorean and press the button and go back to the 1950s and see your mum. And, you know, and it's great entertainment. However, when you address and investigate the reports from people who claim to have traveled in time, it's very different. In most cases, nobody is talking about, or for the most part, most people aren't talking about kind of like that, what I call it, the DeLorean concept. It's nothing like that. Very often, people talk about, they're just walking down the street, and things start to go a bit strange. The color of the atmosphere changes, and then the buildings around you start to change, and the clothing on the people that are walking past you just look very ancient. You know, Victorian times is a classic example. And in these cases, many of these cases, people have seen these events, sort of time travel past, if you like. These cases are very much random. You know, it's not a case of some sort of mad scientist making a time machine. It actually is a case of these events just randomly occurring, and maybe, you know, they sort of appear for about maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and then you're back in the 21st century.
Time slips, right?
Cases are time fascinating slips. Because they don't sort of play along, you know, the classic fictional scenario. So although we can learn a lot from, you know, a lot of thoughts, you know, from the fictional world, when you start looking into the real cases, the actual angle of time travel is very different in the real world.
Yeah, those time slip cases are intriguing. People who suddenly are in a different world or a different age, and then they come back to reality. I've never known for sure what to make of them. But, we have had some fairly prominent alleged time travelers that you touch on in the book,
yeah.
John Titor being one. And I never heard any of those shows with Art Bell. I've heard of them, but never heard the actual broadcast. But he's a really well-known time traveler or alleged time traveler. Can you fill our audience in, those who might not be familiar with his story, of what he claimed?
Well, yeah, John Titor is one of these people, a very controversial person, who claimed to have come back to our present, at least at the time. We're talking about sort of 20 years ago now. But John Teter was a guy who nobody ever really knew who it was. There were various people put forward as to who he really was, and was he really a time traveler from the halfway through sort of the next century, so to speak. And he claimed to have come back from the 2130s, and claimed that the future, or our future, was a very bleak one, and there was reports in his claims about a civil war and nuclear weapons and things like this. So it's a very bleak future. And he came forward, not in person, but with these basically online data, and it grew and grew to the point where he became sort of almost like, an enigmatic character. You know, who is he? Who was he? That kind of thing. But the big question is, was John Teter really a time traveler from our future who'd come back to, as I said, like pretty much two decades ago now? Or was there something else to it? The basic three theories: one is that it's a hoax, two is that it's the real deal, and the intriguing theory that some other people have put forward is the idea that this is kind of like a social experiment to see how people would feel and how they would react if they knew that our future is a very bleak one, because we've screwed it all up in the 20th and the start of the 21st century. In other words, it's kind of like some people view him as someone who was sort of warning us, of what the future might be, but in a fictional situation, but presented as fact. So it's a very strange and complicated story, but it's certainly round about the turning of the last century. I mean, you read these stories, and they are fascinating. The one thing about the John Teter story is how deep and expansive it is, with all these different aspects of our supposed future. And most of it, as he was describing it, was that it was not a good future anywhere. And the people of that era, sort of like 10, 20, 30, that kind of thing, really had kind of a deep hatred of us for screwing everything up for what we did in, 2010, 2020. That kind of thing. Now, of course, 2010's already gone by, and people say, well, that proves it's just a hoax. And then you have other people who say, well, perhaps, you've got this alternative timeline angle. So maybe it did happen, but in a different timeline. Or is that just a get-out clause, So, but the story itself of John Teter is a fascinating. There's no doubt about that at all.
Let's talk about those who in the scientific world are very, they don't believe it's possible. Starting with Stephen Hawking, you quote him in the book. He was one that just was not a believer, and he put down some reasons why. Can you share us what his viewpoint was, why he thought it was highly improbable?
Well, yeah, I mean, when it comes to time travel in the world of science and technology, I mean, again, it's still easily and equally controversial. But at least, we can get to grips with time travel when it comes to science. And there are varying ways. One of them is the concept of black holes, that kind of thing. Now it's important to note that although a lot of work has been done within these fields, these concepts are still really concepts. But with black holes, it's the idea, that whether deliberately or accidentally, you know, you get sucked into a black hole. At least one of the theories is that you could actually sort of been sucked through, and before you know it, you've actually gone way into the future and you haven't realized it. You've also got, for example, other ways as well of traveling through time, such as portals, that kind of thing, where you could potentially travel in incredible distances and in very short times. And in doing so, you actually achieved some degree of time travel. Now, Stephen Hawking was very sort of fascinated by time travel, the idea, you know, that people from the future could clandestinely, you know, sort of come to our era and walk among us, and in a fashion, a clandestine fashion, if you like. But even, you know, if you talk to the sort of the leading scientists in this field, just about all of them would still admit that, yes, this is, you know, Hawking's theories about black holes and portals and doorways, that kind of thing. It is very much theoretical. And where it isn't, as in these situations I mentioned earlier, where at random people suddenly find themselves plunged into a different time zone.
There's a friend of mine named Eric Davis who's quoted in your book a couple of times as somebody who has looked at this from various different angles. Eric was one of the scientists involved in OSAP, the program that we're learning about more. He worked with Bigelow's group at NIDS, and then was involved with Hal Puthoff and OSAP. But he's worked in other sort of secretive clandestine programs for the Air Force, where he looked at teleportation, and he's written papers about wormholes and the possible applications for time travel. I think we're going to go to a break in about a minute here, but we can at least start on talking about Eric and what his ideas are.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, Eric's his paper, you know, is a fascinating one. And when you find it's not only, you know, you've got this, excuse me, what you find with Eric's paper, which basically is very similar to the concept in Star Trek, you know, sort of quite literally, you know, sort of transferred from one place to the other. And that does sort of come into the concept of time travel as well. Now, the circumstances, of course, are fascinating. And the fact that the Air Force, you know, had this sort of fascination as well, you know.
I'll tell you what, Nick, we'll take a break. I'll pick up that thought about what Eric wrote for the Air Force, talking with Nick Redfern about time travel. We're talking about time travel, the science and science fiction, the title of a new book by Nick Redfern, where he gets into the possibilities that scientists have discussed, black holes, white holes, wormholes, being as sort of some kind of a shortcut, the kind of plot devices that have been used in sci-fi movies for a long time as a way to get across the cosmos in the blink of an eye. There is some sort of scientific foundation for these ideas that have been discussed all the way back to Einstein. We're going to get into some of those right after this on Coast to Coast AM. So Nick, Eric Davis has written some really interesting papers. He wrote one for the Air Force Research Lab. He's written others under the guise of the OSAP program, looking at wormholes and advanced kind of propulsion ideas. Could you give us some kind of an idea that isn't too far over my head? Black holes, white holes, and wormholes, the difference between them and how they might work in order to effectuate some form of time travel?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when you think of teleportation, I think most people obviously think of Star Trek, you know, that sort of classic scenario. And what's particularly fascinating about all this is that government agencies did not dismiss Eric's work, and rightly so, and to the extent that the Air Force actually subcontracted Eric to look into the issue of teleportation. And if you read it, you can read it online. It is a fascinating report, a fascinating document, and it looks at the varying theories of teleportation. And you know, we're talking about things like wormholes, things like that, where you could potentially travel. Literally, you know, across the universe. And but on the teleportation angle as well, it has sort of a two side to it. It's not just about teleportation. In a number of cases, you have teleportation combined with time travel as well. So you've got both angles together. And that's where we get into some really sort of controversial angles. I would say that probably the most controversial story, if you like, or angle of teleportation and time travel sort of melting into one would be the 1943 story of the so-called Philadelphia experiment, which is a classic example of teleportation meshed with time travel as well.
So you go into that in great detail in the book. Share with us what you think really happened, you know, because there are various scenarios that have been described over the years. Some would argue it never happened. There was, I think the Navy is what has issued some statements to that effect, that there was no such experiment. Were there others, people like Al Bielek and others who've come forward with fairly detailed descriptions of what happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're quite right, George. I mean, this is a controversial story. There's no doubt about that. And there are various angles to it. For people who may not know, back in 1943 in Philadelphia, in the port, but there was an experiment, a top secret experiment, which supposedly was designed to try and make warships invisible. And so the story went along. Everything totally was starting okay. And then it suddenly went wrong, that the ship, the USS Eldridge, literally vanished into nothingness. And it appeared as if it had literally just vanished. Now, you have different theories as to what happened in this experiment. Some people say, yes, it was an experiment in stealth technology, like the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber. In other words, to try and create a warship that would be, if you like, invisible to the enemy, to the Germans we're talking about in the Second World War. You have some theorists who say it really was just an experiment in radar invisibility. Others have said it was an experiment to create literal invisibility, but that it went wrong, and that some of the crew supposedly were sort of pushed through time to sort of to the 1980s, which is a, you know, sort of outrageous, very bizarre story. However, there's no doubt in my mind that something happened in 1943 with this experiment, or possibly experiments, to try and achieve whatever it was. And there's no doubt in my mind as well that a number of the military guys on the ship were killed, and the experiment, again, whatever it was quickly shut down, simply because they didn't really know what they were doing. A lot of it was sort of, you know, just looking at things with concepts and ideas, and suddenly you've got, you know, the sailors being killed and vanishing and so on. Now, in 1984, a movie called The Philadelphia Experiment was released, and it kind of portrayed both angles. It starts off with a ship that was just going to be made invisible to enemy ships, that kind of thing. But it all goes wrong, and they're flung into 1984, and they have to find their way back to home, or their home at least. And yes, it is a controversial story because it isn't just a Hollywood movie. It is supposed, if you listen to some researchers, that is the actual truth of the situation. Now, if it is a case that, you know, that there was time travel in relation to the Philadelphia Experiment, that would be a fascinating scenario. And it's kind of like, you know, the Roswell case or the JFK assassination. You know, it's one of these stories which gets bigger and bigger. And we really need to sort of look at it carefully. But there's no doubt in my mind at all that some sort of experiment happened. And I wouldn't rule it out, the invisibility angle. The time travel angle, which I talk about in the book, is an intriguing one, but we need to tread careful when we're looking at this case.
You have a side story that you told. I think it was from the book that Bill Moore co-wrote. I don't remember reading this before, but it's reported in the newspapers of this big bar fight that may or may not relate to the Philadelphia Experiment. Can you share that story with our listeners?
Yeah, that is the one you're talking about, George. You're right, yeah. The story of the Philadelphia Experiment, one of the things that we've got in relation to do that is the fact that there is some degree, if you like, of real invisibility and possibly even time travel. And what we have, when you mentioned Bill Moore, with Charles Berlitz in 1979 wrote a book called The Philadelphia Experiment, and Moore and Berlitz went sort of really down deep into this story. And supposedly in the experiment, the Philadelphia Experiment, a number of the sailors were supposedly injured physically and psychologically as well. But there was another side to this as well, that some of the men on the ship would randomly, not so much vanish, but go invisible very briefly. And supposedly, in one of the nearby taverns, just off the shore, there was a bar fight between some of the sailors, and supposedly some of them suddenly just winked out, just vanished. And again, you have the two theories. You know, did they just go invisible briefly because of the effects of the experiment, or were they literally sort of teleported into the future? But there is a newspaper clipping that mentions the fight, and I actually spoke to one of the sailors. This is going back 20 years now. A guy named George Mayerchak, and Mayerchak was someone who was not involved in the experiments per se, but he heard all these rumors way back in 43 of the sailors vanishing. And in other words, this is an important case because the story itself, as we know it, you know, didn't surface until a long time. But Mayerchak was able to prove that although he was sort of, open, if you like, as to what happened, he said for sure he knew of that bar fight and the sailors literally sort of vanishing. And he was happy to go on the record. That was his real name, George Majacek.
You write, I forget where it is in the book, but you wrote about an experiment that was done, and I can recall reading about it some time ago, but where scientists were actually able to send some particles into the future. It might be just a few seconds or a few minutes, but they successfully demonstrated that this is possible. Do you recall the details about that?
I think the one you're talking about actually relates
to Eric?
Stephen Hawking. He actually got involved in something along those lines, the idea of sort of propelling very, very incredibly small grains, if you like, that kind of thing, into the future. And I mean, it's one of these situations where a lot of it really was sort of, looking at things theoretically. But it was the idea was to sort of fling a particle into the future and see what could be done. But again, as far as we know, not a great deal came out of that, really. It was, it was just one of these situations where it was a case, I think, of what are we going to try next? What should we do next?
Of course, you go back to relativity, Einstein. You write about that in a couple different places in the book where, his calculations show if you travel at the speed of light, you leave the planet, you're gone for 2 years, you come back. The yep. people you left behind are going to be the time is going to be different. So explain how that works, because that's a form of time travel, I guess, not quite as the same as H.G. Wells.
Yeah, right. that is a form of time travel in the sense, basically what it is in simple terms, where you're living on planet Earth, where we're all living on planet Earth, but when you have this concept, you haven't so much travel through time. It's a case of time itself slowing down, which is a really fascinating concept. So, in other words, you could come back to the Earth if you were an astronaut, and when you get back to the Earth, it could be the 24th century, and yet, you're still around, but your relatives were all died 300 years previously. So I get, in one sense, it is time travel, but it's a very strange type of time travel when you think it's not so much actual and literal time travel. What it actually is the, as I said, the slowing down time for the person who's traveling at the speed of light and going through the universe. So there's a lot to think about beyond just the idea of time travel. There's a lot of concepts and angles as to how time travel in varying ways could be achieved.
You mentioned in the book, we're talking about Eric Davis and his ideas about using a wormhole, and other scientists have written about that possibility, wormholes being you could find one and get into them, you could in effect travel back in time. But the problem is, as you note in the book, is that we don't know where any wormholes are. We haven't identified one yet, right?
Well, I mean, there are a few people who've come forward who've said that they felt they'd gone actually through, something along those, literally along those lines, like time loops, things like that. One of them, a guy I interviewed about 15 years ago, a guy named in England named John Davis, and this gives us an example of how real time travel is very different to the world of entertainment, if you like. According to John Davis, and the way he explained it to me, he was driving along late one night, and he was going past a field, and he could see the sun was about to come down, and it was a case where he was looking over this large field, and he could see a bunch of guys in what were clearly ancient uniforms and with muskets, literal muskets. And he realized he was driving past an area called Hopton Heath. And Hopton Heath was where, back in 1643, there was a famous and now legendary ancient battle between various factions in the UK. It's a long time ago. But Davis realized he was seeing the actual battle, but from the perspective of having sort of gone briefly through a time loop and being able to see briefly the Battle of Hopton Heath from 1643. Now, that's, if the story's true, and I had no reason to believe that John Davis was a liar or anything, but John admitted to me he had no understanding of how he was able to be projected back to 1643 very briefly, literally just a couple of minutes, and then back again. And he got deeply into this to try and figure it all out and wasn't able to. But his conclusion was that he had travelled through time, but it was so brief and so alternative to what you would expect, you know, from the world of entertainment. He came to believe that time travel was sort of a random concept. You know, it wasn't like pressing 1955 in your DeLorean. It was something that was just totally random. And maybe that's why, you know, we don't really see too many of these cases, because they are so random. It's not, for us at least, you know, a situation where we can
channel it,
get in the vehicle or whatever. Right. You know,
I tell you, there's a story, I'll share it with you in the next segment because we got to go to a break, but there's a story of a time slip in the area around Skinwalker Ranch, seen several times by several of the people who live in Fort Duchesne, of seeing the U.S. cavalry gallop across the plains, and they were stationed there for a long time. But I'll tell you that one on the way back. And listeners, if you've got questions for Nick or your own time travel, time slip stories, get them ready to go. We'll open up the phone lines in this next hour, and we'll hear from you. We'll be right back.